Thomas Aiello is Vice President of Federal Affairs at National Taxpayers Union. He spent 5 years for limited government and lower taxes on the government affairs team at NTU. He's also completed internships on K Street and in the United States House of Representatives for two members from his home state of New York. Thomas holds a bachelor's degree in economics and political science from American University, Washington, D.C., originally from Long Island, New York. He enjoys staying up to date on local issues and rooting for the Yankees, Rangers, and New York Jets. What about the New York Knicks? Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Thomas Aiello.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. What about the New York Knicks? I was a Knicks fan. I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York, and went to Madison Square Garden and saw them win a championship in 1969. How come you don't mention the Knicks in your resume?
I should have. I'm a big Knicks fan, and New York City has been absolutely electric for the past 3 months. So it's a very big accomplishment. It's great that we finally have a championship brought back to New York. It's been way too long.
I agree. I left New York in 1977, came to Santa Barbara, California, and eventually, the Knicks weren't playing and I couldn't follow them, so I ended up rooting for the Celtics, the Knicks' nemesis, just to root against the Lakers in the 80s, and then eventually became a Laker fan. But I became a Knick fan this year, so that's great. That's great.
We're happy to have you on board.
Thanks. Did you grow up near Massapequa, Long Island, near Jerry Seinfeld or Herb Pollan?
Not too far. That's probably about 20 minutes from where I grew up originally. Everything on Long Island is 15 to 20 minutes away. That's why it's the best place on earth.
That's funny. You should say that. I've heard that before. Not about Long Island, but that's funny. Yeah. So you wrote an op-ed, Reduce Regulations and Taxes to Make Rents More Affordable. And before we talk about that, and there you talked about a pending law, which has now been passed, tell me a little bit about National Taxpayers Union.
So NTU, we are the oldest taxpayer advocacy organization in the United States. We've been around for almost 60 years now, and what we do is we fight for lower taxes, lower regulations, free markets, and limited government, both in Congress at the state level and of course at the administration level as well. We really focus on issues that have a taxpayer impact. And there's so many issues that actually impact taxpayers, whether it's housing policy, energy policy, obviously tax and spending, but also things like healthcare and infrastructure as well. There's always a taxpayer angle. And I think in this country right now, as we approach $40 trillion in debt, the taxpayer continues to be burdened with higher spending and more debt that's going to have to be paid back by our children and grandchildren.
It's so important, and we need watchdogs out in California. We have the Howard Jarvis. I don't know if you guys deal with them at all.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do incredible work in California. They're really a model for good government policies everywhere, not just in California.
And you try to focus on national issues, but do you work with different states as well?
We do. We're based in Washington, D.C., but we have a really aggressive state affairs team as well. They put a lot of miles on the NTU credit card going from state to state, pushing back against bad taxpayer policies and then promoting good taxpayer policies as well. I think, conservatives, we get a bad rap for always trying to push back on bad ideas. There's plenty of them, but we also try and promote good policies that actually move the ball forward for taxpayers as well. Right now, there's actually a lot of good efforts at the state to, at the state level to try and cut taxes. There were a whole bunch of states that reduced tax burdens this year, which is great, including Missouri. But then we're constantly pushing back against efforts to rein in data centers and increase spending and put more burdens on the taxpayer. So it's a very interesting job, to say the least.
My guest, Thomas Aiello, a vice president of the Federal Affairs at National Taxpayers Union. Is there the National Taxpayers Union? I noticed on your website it eliminated the word the at National Taxpayers Union.
We go by NTU, no the, but of course, people always put the in front, which isn't a problem. As long as we're getting called out for the good work that we're doing, you could put a the in there.
My uncle Jimmy, back in the 1940s, wrote a song. They all grew up in Brooklyn. He wrote a song called "Who Put the in the Bronx?" So we could write a song who took the away from the National Taxpayers Union. Thomas Aiello, Vice President, Federal Affairs, National Taxpayers Union. So you wrote this op-ed, reduce regulations and taxes to make rents more affordable. And here we are on Radio Real Estate. You said a bipartisan housing bill snaking through Congress, if done correctly, can make a difference. But there are better ways to build more housing. What did you mean by that?
So I think what Congress tried to do and what they did came from a perspective that there's a housing shortage. I think we all can agree housing costs are absolutely out of control. Whether you're a renter like I am, or whether you are a homeowner or trying to purchase a home, it's extremely expensive. And I think all of that comes from this housing shortage that's out there. We're millions of housing units short. Our population continues to grow. And there's such an imbalance between supply and demand that rents just continue to get pushed higher. Of course, we don't build enough single-family homes in the United States. You couple that with these higher interest rates that Americans are dealing with, and home affordability has become the hot home inaffordability, I should say, has become the highest in American history. So what Congress did is they said, hey, we need to address this. Unfortunately, what the bill didn't do is address some of the core factors that actually impact home builders and home construction and apartment construction. Unfortunately, the federal government just doesn't have that big of a role in home building. A lot of the issues that Americans are dealing with are because of their state and local governments. State and local governments, they put up all these barriers to building, particularly in a state like California and New York, where it becomes so expensive for builders to build new housing units that sometimes they just stay on the sidelines, or they don't renovate their units to bring them up to market level so they can rent them out. So it's a very big problem. And I think Congress, to their credit, they tried to do that, but I don't think it's going to have the big impact that many people are expecting.
You know, it's a very good point to make that it's such a local issue, it's a state issue. And yeah, so what can the federal government do? It's interesting to hear on the national level, you mentioned millions short, in California, we've been short forever. I don't remember it. Was there ever a time when things were in balance?
That's a great point. And when you look at some of these local regulations, it really makes you scratch your head and say, why are we doing this? In Los Angeles, they have all these crazy regulations like parking minimums, that if you want to build an apartment complex, you have to have a certain number of parking spots. There's other regulations that say you can't build if you cast a shadow on a street. All of those things make it harder and more expensive to build the housing. And of course, when it becomes more expensive and time-consuming to get the permits and to actually build the units, all of those costs, they get passed along to consumers and renters. So it has that opposite effect. In a state like New York, where you have these ridiculous policies like rent control, where it says, hey, you can't increase rents above a certain percentage, that discourages business landlords from bringing new apartments online or updating out of compliance apartments and bring them up to the level where they can be rented out. There's about 60,000 apartments in New York City that are sitting vacant because it's unprofitable for the landlords to try and update them and rent them out. So when you couple all of these things together, it's a local issue. There's not much the federal government can do. They can't force New York to change their zoning laws. Now, what the bill did that the president allowed to go into effect is it requires the Department of Housing and Urban Development to put together a best practices list of zoning reforms where they're going to look at different localities and what they're doing incorrectly and what they're doing correctly, putting together a guidebook for all of state and local governments to encourage them to reform some of their zoning processes and some of their other environmental laws that make it extremely expensive to build. And we need to be honest that, New York and California, they don't do very good jobs of building housing. But a state like Texas or Florida or even a state like Colorado, they do much better work in building apartment buildings. And I think that's why we've seen such a decline in rents in those places compared to other places. Rents are down about 25 to 30% in a place like Texas than they were just 4 years ago. And that's because you've had a flood of new housing come online. So we need to follow what Texas and Florida are doing. I think they can be real good models for what a pro-growth housing policy should look like.
My guest is Thomas Aiello, a Vice President of Federal Affairs at National Taxpayers Union. I forgot to ask you if you're related to Danny Aiello.
Somewhere down the line, I'm sure.
Always. You're listening to Mark Schneibman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. I'm so glad you mentioned Texas. I want to follow up on that because UCSB Economic Forecast, they brought up a specific town or county, and unfortunately, I didn't write it down for this interview, where they completely upended rents and reduced rents. And I think the quote was, "You could get a building permit in 22 days." And I was having a conversation with a guy who, back in the late 70s, bought a lot, a vacant parcel in New Jersey, and within 2 months, his house was built. And so all of that has changed. As you mentioned, California, it's just such a battle to just get a building permit. Now, they are forcing a lot of building and construction on infill right now, much to the dismay of many neighbors. And but they're kind of building a lot of rental apartments. Of course, most people want to live in a home, so I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work. But you mentioned parking. It's funny. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I want to go along with allowing no parking for units because it just puts a burden. But you see it as an obstacle preventing things from getting built?
I mean, it's just one of the different regulations and rules that developers have to follow. There's so many local governments that have actually rolled back some of those parking minimum mandates, and we've seen an explosion of proposed housing permits in a place like Minneapolis or Denver, for example. They've reformed it, and that's why you're seeing a surge in building permits in a place in those places. But I also think there's, when we say that the federal government doesn't really have a big role in housing construction, well, that's true. But I do think the federal government can do a little bit more than what they're doing. And what do I mean by that? Well, the federal government and the Trump administration, they've imposed basically universal tariffs on all things coming into the United States. And in some cases, it's even higher on specific goods. So Canadian softwood lumber, for example, that's the primary building material in multifamily housing units. We tax that at about a 50% rate. So when you are taxing one of the biggest components of an apartment building, of course, that's going to add to the cost that developers have to pay. We've also seen that on things like copper and appliances. You need the copper pipes, and you need specific apartment units to have things like dishwashers or, in some cases, washer and dryers. When you're adding tariffs on those goods, it increases the cost for these developers, which in turn result in higher rents that they charge their tenants. I think if you were to cut back on some of those taxes, you could put deflationary pressure on rents. It's the same thing with other regulations as well at the federal level. You have an effort by the House of Representatives and the Senate to roll back some of these environmental regulations on things like shower heads and dishwashers, which require less water usage in these products and less electricity usage as well. By rolling those back, you're going to encourage businesses that produce these products to lower their prices as well. All of those things go into what makes housing more expensive. It's not just the apartment minimum of the parking minimums, and it's not just the permits and the environmental review process that slow and raise the cost of housing construction. It's all of these other things that people might not think of. So
What?
we really do need a holistic approach for how we approach this issue. So it is really just more than what the local governments are doing.
Let me understand what you said about shower heads and water use. My guest, Thomas Aiello, Vice President of Federal Affairs at National Taxpayers Union. I'm suffering from a little bit of vertigo, so I kind of missed. Are you? What were you, what was you? What's your suggestion on the water showerhead usage? What's the answer?
So what the Obama and Biden administrations did is they required the builders of showerheads and dishwashers to be more environmentally friendly. So what they had to do is spend all of this money to innovate and adjust their products because it was going to become illegal for them to sell in the United States to be more energy efficient. So what these businesses did, they spent all this money, they innovated, they found new suppliers to actually manufacture the different showerheads and the dishwashers. That cost them money to do so. So when these businesses have to spend more money, they have to pass those added costs along to the consumer in the form of higher prices for the goods. So when they've actually, and they've done a very good job of trying to keep costs down, but the House of Representatives, they've passed a few bills to roll back some of those environmental mandates to actually allow businesses to have the choice to sell cheaper products or these more environmentally friendly products. So it gives consumers the choice. But I think when you're building a very expensive apartment building, you probably want to keep costs to a minimum. So they have the choice of either being more environmentally friendly or offering or purchasing less environmentally friendly appliances at a cheaper cost. And I think that's where these developers would prefer to be. So if you can spend less money, in theory, you would expect these lower costs to be passed along to consumers as well.
I understand what you're saying, and believe me, I'm a big fan for fewer regulations. I want to see, things streamlined and built more quickly. We got California, we got such a water shortage that I'm not sure I'd want to roll back on some of these water saving devices. I'm not sure what it really costs, but it's kind of a huge issue out here. So, as much as I agree with almost everything you're saying, I'm not sure I'd want to roll back too much on that.
Sure. And we also have to remember that California has their own water mandates as well. So just because we're rolling it back at the federal level doesn't mean there's going to be a significant change in a place like California. But in another state like Vermont, which might be awash in water and not have the same water issues, it might make more sense to install some of those lower cost shower heads or appliances or toilets. So again, it's a very small part of what makes up an apartment unit. So I don't want to conflate that. That's the most important and pressing issue facing a
Right.
developer, but it's just one of the many things that developers have to deal with and plan for.
Right. And there's certainly when, you have 100 small things, suddenly it adds up. I was very shocked to hear you say that in New York, there are about 60,000 vacant units because of the pressure of rent control. And Santa Barbara recently, the city of Santa Barbara, in December of 2025, instilled a mandated a rent freeze, and they're trying to put together rent control, and it's kind of sent chills throughout the adjacent communities where landlords who were charging below market rent suddenly faced the prospect of being frozen at that, and then having small incremental increases where they could never ever catch up. So it's kind of had the opposite effect. And you started the conversation with, feeling that rent control is not the answer, correct?
Rent control is the best way to destroy a city other than bombing it. That's a famous quote from an Austrian economist, and it's so true. In New York, for example, I said you have the 60,000 vacant apartments. That's money that landlords are losing every month. If they're not renting out their unit, they're not making money on it. But from their perspective, I will lose less money each month by not renting it out than I would if I had to bring it up to code and then rent it out that way. So landlords, they're in a lose-lose situation. And they are dealing with this because there was this crazy law passed in 2019 by the state of New York and the New York City City Council, where they imposed all these crazy environmental mandates to get every to and all these other rules and regulations that would cost these property owners tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to bring everything up to code. So they said, I'm not spending tens of thousands of dollars just so I can make below market rents. Plus, the new New York City mayor imposed a rent freeze on rent-stabilized apartments. So before you know it, they'd be losing thousands of dollars a month if they were to bring all these apartments up to code and rent them out, basically for no money. At the end of the day, landlords are businesses like any other. Their primary motivation is to make a profit. If you remove that profit motivation, there's no reason for businesses to exist or compete. And I think that's what's really dangerous about this situation is it doesn't just stay isolated in New York. It goes to other blue cities as well that are looking at rent regulation. And unfortunately, it's not going to lower rents. It's not going to keep rents in check. We need more housing in every city in the United States. And you don't get there through rent control. You get it by businesses coming in, knowing they can make a profit, coming in and building, and then that will keep rents in check as well.
Right. And making a profit doesn't mean gouging. And as I mentioned, so many landlords have been renting under market value, and it's really put a chill and fear in them on the rent freeze. Thomas Aiello, Vice President, Federal Affairs, National Taxpayers Union, talking about his op-ed that he wrote. I'll put that up when we podcast the program. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me. And, not sure if the Yankees or Jets going to do any good, but at least we got the New York Knicks. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.